You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Reunion. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm Jane from London.
And of course, the Klingon from Indiana, Brian.
Kapla!
Harbinger Denimal.
Harbinger.
Yes, that's part of the new surprises I've come to since the last time we've had a discussion.
Yes, and so far to date, you're the only one that people have actually said they're looking forward to listening to. So it's this ought to be fun for everyone. And so, Brian, how's it going, bud?
Okay. I'll give you the cliff notes because if I do that, I'll be spending an hour here. We won't get this show done. Okay, second granddaughter on the way due July 21st.
Uh-huh.
Goddaughter comes August 21st.
Hmm.
And as you tell by my intro, I have a call sign now.
Mm-hmm.
I've earned a right in Starfleet International to have a call sign.
Hmm.
So my call sign, I picked the call sign I thought was most appropriate to me. If y'all want to look it up, how to spell it is Harbinger.
Harbinger.
I recommend everyone look it up because the definition is got multiple terms, but basically I'm the messenger. I'm what comes before hell.
Hmm.
Yeah, I have to say, I've only heard Harbinger in the context of Harbinger of Doom, as in the bringer of bad news. I hope that isn't a...
Yeah, that's exactly why I took it.
Hmm.
Look up the other terms, Doc. There's several terms for it.
That's funny.
But yeah, that's usually the main term is, I'm the messenger of doom to come.
Doom to come.
Yeah. I'm in the group of as most people don't know, I belong to Starfleet International, the Star Trek International Fan Club. I'm in the Starfleet Marine Corps end of it, and I'm in what they call the Mecha Division. It's kind of like Robotech for Star Trek, and I fly the what they call a AAFM, which is basically the equivalent to the Marcross human robots that convert from fighter, the mid-fighter, to robot. And since I'm usually the first one to land when the Marines come, that's kind of why I took my nickname like I did. The impending doom that's to come to you, because I'm usually the first one on the ground holding the landing zone for the rest of the mecha units to come down on the ground and wield death and destruction to everybody.
And which branch of the service did you serve in one time?
I served the United States Navy.
Where can you find pleasure? Search the world for treasure. Learn science, technology. Where can you begin to make your dreams all come true? On the land or on the sea? What can you learn to fly, play in sports or skin dive? Study oceanography.
Seven seas.
know. The ultimate oxymoron.
Now, I was just thinking, you know, I had to go to into that because I'm going to think about whether I want to toss that sound effect in or not now. But anyway.
Yes, guys, he's talking about the village people in the Navy.
Yes, in the Navy. So I may have to do that.
It's never stopped you now. Why should it never stopped you when we taped when we had the Lou Trek show? Yeah. Why should it stop you now?
Of course. Yeah, just toss it right in. And of
toss
course,
it in right here.
Oh, no, I could do it in post. I can't let you hear it anymore since I'm on this new microphone. So okay.
That's what I said. I'm telling you, I told you where to put it at.
Oh, I know where to put it. I'll know where to put it, Brian.
Oh, yeah, I know you know.
I know where to put it. Somewhere where it's been before. So how's work going for you? You still with
me? I'm still working for the Defense Finance and Accounting Service in Indianapolis in Air Force bill pay. Hmm. I'm still a debt collector. I take money from the poor servicemen when they travel with too much money and they don't pay back to the government. I go into their paychecks and I steal it back from them so the federal Ooh. Government never gets never loses their money.
Oof, I hope they don't know who you are.
Oh, they know who I am all the time. They keep calling me, asking me, how can we do this better?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, this is the government. There's no way to do it better.
No, I'm serious. Y'all see some of the thank you calls for helping me set this up the right way because their base don't know their butt from a hole in the ground.
Okay. All right, dude. Well, let me see here when the last time we had you on.
It was the last Klingon episode, and I think it was
Sins of the Papa.
Sins of the Father. When was it? Worf had to go.
Yep.
Go back to a Romulan planet where there was Klingons and Romulans living.
No, that's a couple of years.
Sins of the Father. Worf had to go to the High Council and take this commendation.
Right.
Indeed.
After Kern comes aboard. Okay. Yeah.
Leave it to a brother to be a pain in the backside.
Definitely.
You notice I've cleaned up my act. I'm not as liberal with my colorful cliches anymore like I used to when we taped on the Lou Trek show. You had to bleep them out.
Oh, that'll bleep a lot of things out. But, all right. And lately, we've been doing pretty darn good not having to edit, so.
Well, I'm on board tonight, so I know you'll be doing a lot.
Yeah, I may have to do something. Oh, what are you going to do?
Oh, one more warning. I went to McDonald's and had three large Cokes. That's all I'm going to say on the subject.
Oh, good Lord.
It's going to have to be a short episode then.
No, what he means is I'm going to be doing a lot of editing. taking a few... Okay. Okay. Barnyard animal sounds out. So, all right, what are you going to do? Okay, well, let's go on, guys. It's good to have you again, Brian.
I just thought I'd warn you, giving you the heads up.
Yeah.
Usually I don't give you that much respect. You just have to deal with it.
Yeah. Well,
by the way, that is the motto of the Gorkon, by the way.
No respect?
No. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Gotcha. Well, the dog's up there barking, so she doesn't care whether it gets in or not. So what are you going to do? Okay, so anyway, well, then the synopsis for tonight's episode is Captain Picard is selected to arbitrate the succession of the new chancellor of the Klingon Empire, and in doing so finds out who dishonorably murdered the old fat. You're still fat, Kinpuk, chancellor. Also involved is Ambassador Kalar, who has a surprise for Worf. I'm not going to finish that sentence. This is the 7th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation, released on November 5th, 1990. Now, the teleplay looks like a teleplay and written by. So, teleplay by Thomas and Joe Perry, written by Ronald D. Moore, and for the first-time writer, Brannon Braga, who obviously would become instrumental in Star Trek later.
So is that true? Is it Brannon Braga's first script?
Yep.
Or at least his first work?
His first work on Star Trek.
Accredited work. Okay.
Yep.
So I know that we picked up Ron D. Moore last season.
Yep.
But okay, cool.
Yeah,
I learned something new.
Yeah, of course, I cheated on Memory Alpha. And, of course, a story by Drew Dingman, Thomas, and Joe Perry. So, also written by Jonathan... directed by Jonathan Frakes. Guest stars include Susie Plaxen as the oh-so-lovely Kalar, Robert O'Reilly as Bug Eyes, also known as Gowron, Charles Cooper as "You're Still Too Fat" Kim Peck, who doesn't live to see past a commercial break, and John Stuhler as Alexander. Not a clue. I always thought it was Brian Boswell, I think it is, the whole time. And finally, and this is something we haven't been doing, Doc, but we really should be, because I can't remember who. I think it was a Delta Quadrant crew who always used to say, and Majel Barrett as the computer voice. But so what do we think about this episode? Brian, as a resident Klingon, I know you're itching to talk, so why don't you tell us what you think so far? Brief synopsis.
Brief synopsis. I didn't like the way Kalar brought her son into this mess, but I understood why she did it. I do like her and Troy had some conversations about her anger issues. No, that was the one before that.
Right.
But you get a chance to see just how much of a snoop she really is as she goes back trying to find Worf's little dirty secret. But I like the way the Worf had to deal with his discommodation and having both of them in there, and how he accused DeRoss of doing certain things. We'll get to that later in the discussion. Overall, it was a good, reasonable Klingon showing of how the Empire was, or how the Empire was going to be introduced down the line in DS9 and later episodes in the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doc?
Okay, I think this is an episode of two halves here. I actually like the Klingon stuff. I like the continuing arc that Worf goes through and the Empire goes through. I have got no good things really to say about why they bring Alexander on board and make him a staple of the next couple of years, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can park that somehow, this is pretty good.
Yes, I agree with that. I it's pretty obvious to me that they're looping Alexander's voice, and that's not really him talking, because as they're walking, you can kind of see as they're walking in the corridor, he's looking up at Worf, who's like 14 feet above him, and you know, and he's looking down as he's walking along, and it just seems like he's watching cue cards. I'm not exactly sure what use Alexander. I think I could have done without Alexander completely, but as far as the Klingon stuff, yeah, I think it's great, because we're getting more and more bits and pieces of the Klingon culture. And
one weird thing about the episode, right, is that it's almost as if they bring on the Alexander character, and then because they have him moved off the ship at the end, mm-hmm. by having him go back to Earth or to live with Worf's parents, it's almost as if they're kind of, they're not quite sure if they want Worf to have a kid or not. Mm-hmm. They're leaving it open that they potentially can bring him back, but they're not committing that it's, you know, irreparably going to change the day-to-day life of Worf. So right.
Well,
in a weird way, they don't quite have the courage of their conviction to follow through with it, and I don't quite see what they're doing here. Anyway, sorry.
I tell you what they're doing here. They're getting rid of Susie because she's a pain in the backside. No offense, Susie, I love you, but you're a pain.
Why is that? Who has that opinion of Susie?
Why, yeah.
I've met her in real life, trust me. She's up there with William. No, or Wild no. Bill, as we know him.
No, sure not.
Hold on. Yeah. So yeah. In the last 10 seconds, we've said Kalar is a bad character, and also Riker is a bad character?
No,
Riker.
Kalar's a great character. I was pissed they killed her off. I'm just saying, yeah. Susie's not the greatest person in the world.
Really? See, I didn't know that. I've never met her, so that sucks.
Yeah, she's not as bad as Wild Bill, but she's close.
Full of herself.
I'll give you a hint. Delancey is more liberal than she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's saying a lot.
Wow.
She's not as bad as Wild Bill, but she can be stuck up at times. But I'm pissed off they killed off the character. I think the character was a great character and they should have kept it in. But I understand that's why they brought Alexander in, was because it got rid of her.
That's not a fair replacement.
No.
It really isn't
close. What do you guys think? Let's jump ahead and let's imagine the future. Kalar survives. They took the oath. She and Alexander live on the ship. Worf is a family man now. Do you think Worf's character could have grown a little better? Or some of the future episodes with Kalar would have been better? I mean, let's compare him to Keiko O'Brien.
Okay, right off the first bat, I can tell you from experience, Kalar would have kept her duties and brought Alexander around with her.
She would have not stayed on the ship, in other words?
She would have not stayed on the ship. She still would have been the Klingon ambassador to the Federation, and Alexander would have followed her around. What I question is whether or not that she would have changed her mind down the line and actually move Alexander to the ways of the warrior, because I think she would have. Just because she understands where being a male would be better for her down the line. And I think Morta would have greatly accepted her as a member of House Morta.
Mm-hmm.
When Worf moves on over into the DS9 area.
Mm. So why do you think they killed her off then? What was the point?
I don't know, and that's one of them questions. I think if and when we get the Lou Trek show back up and running again, that would be a good episode. Is let's ask around, why do they think they got rid of that character? Because I thought it was a pretty good character. I mean, we had some good storylines with her a few times we've had her on. I think they could have done more with her if they would have kept her in the show. But again, I'm not the writers of Star Trek The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that made the decision to do this. All I have to do is live with the decision and question it for the rest of my life.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, so the Enterprise is checking out some more radiation somewhere in space when all of a sudden a Klingon attack cruiser decloaks. Is that a WTF moment there?
No. I mean, it would be if it would have been any other captain that's not used to Klingons, yeah, it would have been, oh my God, shields up, phasers on.
Mm-hmm.
But with Picard, no. He's used to dealing, he understands that the Klingons do what they do and why they do it that way. So for him, it's not unusual. It's not something you immediately go to battle stations on.
Mm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. He's a little more reserved and tactical.
Experience with dealing, a little bit more experience, oh, pardon me, dealing with the Empire.
Okay. Doc, your thoughts?
No, I think it's fine. I think it's fine. I think we haven't had the Klingons for quite a while, right? There's not been that much interaction. I think it's from a perspective of, not in-universe, but from the episode, it's quite good to have this as the introduction, and you're kind of basically thrown right in. And I like the way that both the Klingons and the Romulans can do this, right? They can just appear from nowhere, and all of a sudden you kind of go up, shift gear on the episode, and it's bang, straight into Klingon.
Right.
Keep in mind too, you're holding the ship with the Chancellor in it. So they're gonna be a little bit more unannounced than they would if they were a regular crew. If it was a regular warship coming up to them, they probably wouldn't have been cloaked. but because you're carrying the Chancellor, precaution is a little bit more to the precaution, like being cloaked before they come up on it, is something that's normal with also dealing with the Klingons too. Just keep that in mind.
So why couldn't they call the Enterprise and say we're en route, Mina Sir?
Because then that would have gave their enemies a designation where they might be at immediately.
Mm.
Okay, if you I use this as a reference, but even in the books, the Left Hand of Fate, where J.G. wrote the novels, his ship, the Necfar, was also in cloak en route back to Kronos. Okay, he wasn't uncloaked when he was traveling. So it's a normal kind of thing when the Chancellor is moving around that they cloaked. And I think that came from the Star Trek VI when mm-hmm. it came in and met the Enterprise and they were uncloaked.
Okay.
Okay, I think that also comes from that point. They don't want the Chancellor's ship being known where it's at until it actually is there. Does okay. that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so Ambassador Kalar, an unexpected pleasure. Mr. Worf, go get her. Okay, now. Okay, is there really no one else on board the ship? Maybe, you know, the first officer, maybe Data, maybe even Wesley couldn't go greet Kalar. It's got to be Worf. I mean,
well, normal procedure. In fact, I'm surprised Riker didn't go meet Kalar because she is an ambassador to the from the Klingon Empire. That would have been normally the first officer's job to go do that. I think Worf did it because he knows the relationship with Kalar. So that's why he sent Worf instead of sending Riker on this one. Sometimes sending a Klingon to meet a Klingon, even a dishonored one, is better than sending, like, your first officer.
Well, diplomatic, especially the ambassador, it should have been the first officer. Or maybe even both the first officer and the captain. But to send the guy who's dishonored among her people, it just seemed like he did it intentionally, is what
yeah,
it felt
he did.
Like.
He did.
You will not go into hiding. Oh, man. If you know, I'm surprised Worf doesn't deck him for that.
It's called respect. It's called respect, Lou. Because there's been several times where Worf had looked up at Picard and said, "If it wasn't for the fact you're my captain, I would kill you where you stood."
Right.
Okay. Or I respect. If it wasn't for the fact I respect you, I would kill you where you stand. He has said that in the movies to Picard. Okay. So it's not like he does it. It's because he respects the person. He respects Picard for who he is.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why he's a decking.
Doc?
Oh, I was going to say, I think it is weird that Picard kind of thinks, oh, who should I go and meet the ambassador? Oh, yeah, she's Klingon. He's Klingon. Oh, I'll send Worf over. But so I think that's stupid. But once that's been made, that decision's been made, Worf then kind of goes, well, I don't want to go. And kind of says, oh, you know, my dishonor's going to look bad. And I think he squirms a little bit too much for someone that's supposed to be all about duty.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, it should offend her to have somebody disgraced to greet her. She's just not typical Klingon.
Well, yeah, that you hit the right spot on that. She's not an atypical Klingon. She's a half-human, half-Klingon, number one. And this is, you want, for all practical purposes, let's put perspectives where it's at. This is her mate, okay? That's the only reason why Worf sent Worf in the first freaking place, okay? It's her mate. She's going to have to deal with him whether she likes it or not. Oh, well. But hey, if you take their relationship is bad, look at Mortox and Solera, I can't remember her name, but their relationship is like, let's see who has the best battle between each other. because their relationship is like fighting World War II. But like he says, I just love it when we fight. It's like any other relationship, even human relationship. Oil and water don't mix, but in this case, oil and water makes great salad.
So, but does Picard know that they were mates?
Yeah. I think it's come up in the conversations down the line and stuff.
Hmm.
It would surprise me if Picard didn't know.
Okay. All right, well.
But that's my opinion.
Okay, well, two to transport from the Klingon vessel.
Two?
I don't know why that surprises Worf. I mean, sometimes...
It shouldn't surprise him.
Yeah, sometimes more than one person might be aboard from
the ambassador and her member of staff.
Yes. Or her son.
Yeah, or her son, indeed.
Well, keep in mind, when we have seen the ambassador come on, she is one of the few ambassadors that doesn't have aides with her. So to hear two beaming, it would kind of surprise me. Why is there... In my mind, first thing I'd be asking, why is there two beaming? Okay.
Yeah.
Just as experience, if you've seen how she is in the show and how she's been in the show, all the other times we've seen her, she's never had an aide. But every other ambassador you have on, they have anywhere between one to six aides.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Hmm. All right. Well, anyway. So she beams aboard with her little boy, about 2 feet tall, skinny and scrawny as heck. Definitely not a warrior child, but...
Well, hang on, I haven't said that, right? This baby is supposed to be no more than 2 years old? That's a pretty impressive specimen for a two-year-old.
Well, he's played by a six-year-old, but...
Indeed. No, but, okay, so we'll put it this way. The last time Worf and Kayla got together and had the opportunity to get down to it, it was only 2 years ago.
Scratch their fingernails together. Not older than
2 years. Indeed. Yes. Rub their toes.
Oh, no, it's all in the fingers. Don't you remember when he squeezed her fingers together and caused her hand to bleed? That's where it happens in Klingons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Lou, you don't know much about Klingon mating rituals, do you?
Yeah, take that, Lou.
never ask a Ferengi about Klingon ritual.
That's right. Got that right.
Ask a Ferengi about Ferengi rituals. Now you might get you might actually get an honest answer, maybe, if you're lucky. Okay, keep in mind who we're talking about here. But you got to understand, we talk about this a lot in the Klingon circles, and we all had the same argument. This is Alexander, 2 years old. Come on, give me a break, will you? Klingons evolve fast at young age, but not that damn fast. Keep in mind, look at how old he was towards the end of Star Trek, The Next Generation, and then look how old he was when DS9 came along and the war came. When the war came with the Dominion, he was actually a soldier in the Klingon Empire.
Right, and that's no more than like 6-7 years in the future from now, right? Because it's
I think eight or nine, I think. But even still, that's 11 years old if we're counting the years right here. He's an 11-year-old and he's going to war? Come on. I mean, I have to question this one.
Of course. Yeah,
but that's the discussion that we get across in the Klingon circles all the time, and nobody can give us a straight answer on it.
There is no answer.
In fact, the experts can't even give us a straight answer on it. The people who created this paradox.
Right.
Of course, you got to keep in mind, too, if a Klingon doesn't die in battle... You got to keep in mind, most Klingons will live to be anywhere between 130 to 170 years old, too. Okay? That's a heck of a long time to live.
Okay. I don't know how Klingons could possibly live that long, since they usually kill each other off at a very young age.
Well, keep in mind, Kor, the last of the three Dahar Masters, the last of the three original, was actually over 150 years old when he did Once Into the Breach.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Just keep that in mind, too.
All right.
But again, he was also one of the enhanced Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, look how long Kempek lived. I mean, he the longest standing chancellor in the Klingon Empire. I think his reign was, what, 100 years, Doc? It was either 70 to 100 years as a chancellor. That tells you just how much power he wielded over those years.
But he was in such bad shape, I'm surprised somebody didn't peck him off somewhere down the line.
Well, they did. They did it. They did it the smart way.
No, not just that. I mean, just take him on in battle. I mean, Worf took on Gowron later. Why didn't somebody just, you know, take on Kempek? What kind of a fighter could he have been?
Pretty damn good one. If nobody ever challenged him straight up to his position, Lou.
That's a good point. I guess so.
Okay. That's the hallmark of one of the greatest chancellors of our time.
Okay.
Nobody dared to openly confront him. They had to kill him by poisoning him later in his life. I mean, at his old age, he was still that powerful.
Okay. Well, we got to go on. So,
yeah.
How about the bite on the cheek?
Okay, I can live with it, but.
All right. So Kempek,
what do you thought, Doc?
I'm okay now. Thanks, Lou.
No bite on the cheek for you there, Doc.
Yeah, no bite on the cheek for me.
Okay. All right. I'll try and restrain myself in a couple months.
Absolutely.
So Kempek,
just as long as you don't bite me, you got sharp teeth. You're Ferengi. You got just as sharp as teeth as Klingon.
Sometimes I do. Anyway, Kempek, the leader of the High Council, is dying because someone has been poisoning him. And of course, what Klingon warrior would poison the Chancellor in secret? So,
A coward.
Which in the dictionary says Duras. But we didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, let's not get into that discussion because there's a long discussion of whether or not it was actually Gowron who killed
him. That's a good point, too. So, okay. Kempek has requested Picard to arbitrate the succession of power. If I understand this correctly, even though only two challengers are there, he gets to choose who those challengers are. Is that the Jajuk or something? Or
no, there was only two that presented themselves to the High Council that was worthy enough to lead. He's picking the one he feels is the most qualified to do it. But that's what this ritual is.
Yes, but he gets to decide who the challengers are. And he even says, well, if there's only two challengers, what am I doing here? And that's when he says, well, I want you to find out who has killed me. That's very interesting for a man to say, I want you to find out who has killed me. Because obviously he knows he's gone.
Yeah. And I say, you say this now, but later on down the episode, you'll understand why Picard did this. And this is atypical of a Klingon. Okay, we'll get to that when it comes back. Sorry for interviewing, throwing that in, but I wanted to give a prelude of why Klingons do what they do, and this is why he went to Picard to do all this.
Right. Yes, I got notes on that too. Misdirection. So, but if Picard is to choose the challengers, could he simply have eliminated Duras from the running because he's dishonorable? And everyone knows it.
Okay. What happened at Sins of the Father? He can't use to discredit him because the High Council has accepted Worf's accommodation.
Right.
So he can't. He knows he's dishonorable. He knows he's for the Romulan Empire, but that evidence isn't in play for this. It's all based on his combat and leadership skills, And that's why Gowron, that's why there's only two challengers, Gowron and Duras, because they're the only two people who have earned the right to lead the Klingon Empire among the council and the generals that are out there currently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doc, anything?
Now, what I was going to suggest, though, is that I suspect that that Picard does have the power, but also, at the same time, it's like it's a political game, right? And if he were to make a decision that is that goes against someone, and it doesn't appear to be reasonable, I assume he's just playing with politics here, and the Empire could descend into a civil war.
Well, that's why he chose Picard, is to keep...
Indeed.
To keep us going into a civil war, or figure out which one of those two actually poisoned him so the other one would be qualified, whether it was Duras or Gowron.
Mm. So I think it's the issue really with regards to Picard's role isn't so much the power that he has or doesn't have, but it's more of a how he plays it. Because I think that, you know, the legitimacy of his position can be completely turned around by someone murdering him there and then. And when you've got all these warriors there, that's potentially a very likely outcome. So I think he's just having to play late the politics and try to really follow the fine line to make sure that as the decision is made, it's made in a way that doesn't, ruin everything for the Empire.
Well, I think you also have to take into account, too, Campek didn't trust nobody. That's one thing I could say about the shrewdness of his leadership. He trusted nobody on his council, okay? There was nobody he trusted. So what did he do? He went to somebody he knew he could trust, okay? Even though that no matter what decision he made, one would look at it as, okay, you're doing this to keep a civil war, keep us from going to war, or if you choose Duras, it's because Gowron has either been killed or been so brutally. He's been basically, proved that he killed Campek so he could take power and put Duras automatically on the throne. And if he chooses Gowron, Duras is just going to turn around and say, well, Picard don't like the Duras family, so we're going to war, which eventually came up to what will be down the line, I think, in another year. Is the argument that's coming on. So no matter what Picard does, he's in a really bad position, and Campek is asking him to do the impossible.
Okay. Well, then. Well, so we get aboard Campek's ship, and it's a good thing he's dead because those pain sticks might have hurt. But during the ceremony, of course, a bomb goes off. And I'm pretty sure, I think we all knew who caused that before the commercials ever ended.
Back to the pain sticks real quick. Do you know why they used the pain sticks on Kim Pak?
To prove he's dead?
Yeah, because you can't have... The ritual states that they have to prove his death. So they do it by putting him through the pain stick ritual to see if he's still alive. Basically.
Right.
I wanted to clear that up before you got email saying, well, why didn't you talk about that, Lou? That's important. Why are they using the pain sticks on him? And for the novices who are out there, by the way.
Yes, of course. And of course, Duras, when he was jabbing him with his pain stick, he gave him one more encore jab.
Oh, I mean, that's because he both took pleasure in that event, at least
No, he just upset because he's been leader for so damn long. He should have been leader. Mm. His parting shot.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. Oh boy, Worf and Kalar. It came very close. They were almost taking the oath, but nope. Worf backed out because it would shame Alexander. Right.
Yeah, because his discommodation went back three generations. Mm-hmm. So even his son would feel the wrath of the discommodation.
Right. Oh, yeah, Worf's son. Yeah, got it. Okay.
But it doesn't seem like it would be the most important thing to Alexander. I mean, I think that Kalar does mention it, that, she's obviously an outsider. I don't think she's going to be raising a son that's going to be it's going to be a warrior, or at least a likely warrior on her own. So I think it's a relatively, it's a smaller price to pay, right, than marrying into a very noble family in the Klingon Empire.
Right.
And having this combination apply to them.
Yeah. The Zhajuk. Basically a stall for time. Because the challengers have to prove their worthiness to lead the council. And the only thing we hear was G-Doc battle. I would have liked to have heard a few more battles. Maybe, like, how many people they killed in that battle, or how they killed them. We didn't hear anything from Duras, so we get one from Gowron.
Oh, I understood why Picard did the ritual, what he did. But, oh, man, I could see it back in the early days when you only had like 20 battles to talk about. In this day and age, they didn't hardly have any battles because who are they fighting with? They're fighting with each other if they're fighting anyone. Okay, or maybe a Romulan, maybe on an outside shot, or maybe a Cardassian at least at the farthest end. There really wasn't nothing to talk about other than their leadership skills to right. make them go through that ritual. Oh, man. No wonder they were both so pissed. I'd be pissed, too.
I would like. Is the Klingon Empire still battling the Tribbles, or is that still long past?
Oh, that's a long pass.
Yeah, that's...
You're talking about early in the DOS line. The only warriors left that might have been in that battle was that the Mortar, that white hair old goat, and the three Dahar masters. Those are probably the only three left. And that old guy that Worf talked to in DS9 to find out what Gowron was doing when they came to DS9 and attacked it. Those are the only warriors I could think of that might actually been old enough to been in the Tribble War.
So I wonder what, since you brought it up, I have to ask, what do you think the Klingons are doing after DS9 was done with all those Tribbles that reemerged, repopulated themselves?
They were sharpening their blades for a glorious battle.
Oh, good God. I can't imagine whoever is in charge of Stovacor, has this long list of things that this warrior in front of him has done. And one of them is killed a little furry Tribble.
Yeah, you know why Tribbles, why Klingons hate Tribbles so much?
Because they hate them.
No. The sound they make actually is very irritating to their hearing and nervous system. And that is in written documentation, by the way.
I was going to say, it's got to be in the books. I've never seen that on film.
But... No, the Klingon Language Institute came up with why they went to wars, because that's how come that the Tribble was able to detect the Klingon, because their Klingon, I guess the Klingon the physiology of a Klingon can't handle the sounds from the Tribble.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right, so it turns out that the bomb... Was it just that the bomb had a Romulan detonator?
Yeah, it was actually a Romulan bomb all in itself. It's the fact that the Klingons didn't even take the bother of the time to even look to see what the whole composition of the bomb was. It actually took Worf and his Federation style of investigation to actually come up with it.
Right.
Klingons just scanned it and said, "Oh, it's a bomb."
It's a bomb.
And if you notice, both of them took the same attitude.
Right. Because they don't want to tip their hand just yet.
Right.
But I love.
I don't think it's that. I think that they. I think they don't have the forensic investigation, just because I don't think they consider it as... I don't think they really matter. It matters, right? Mm-hmm. So from Gowron's perspective, he knows that Duras did it, unless he thinks he did it himself. And from Duras' perspective, he knows that the other guy did it, unless he did it himself. So in a way, they both know the truth. It's really only the Federation that doesn't know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of it being, let's look into a bit more, and we might reveal a particular connection to a Romulan device. I don't think that's really at the front of their mind. They just think, that painting in much broader strokes than that, I think.
Well, if you got to look at the mentality of a Klingon forensic specialist, they're going to look at the most obvious thing and move on. Where a Federation will be like CSI, they look at every little titty bit of something and figure out what it is.
Did you just hear what he said? I don't even think he heard what he just said.
Yeah, I did.
That's staying in. Let's see if anybody else goes. Someone's going to right now play it back and listen to what you said. See if you got it. Put it in the forum. Don't say anything. Okay.
But it's like, okay, be like me looking at the bomb and a bomb squad guy looking at the bomb. I'll look at it and say, well, it's a big explosion. There's a few wires here and everything, where the bomb squad guy will look at it and say, oh, here's the wire, here's the detonator, this is explosive powder. And see what I'm seeing? That's the difference between Klingon and Federation forensic studies.
Mm.
Now, does that make sense?
Right. But I did like it when Worf slams that pad down like Perry Mason about, the detonator. Bam! Do you know who Perry Mason is, Doc?
I do not, no.
Boy, you have so been sheltered over there.
Tell me about it.
Perry Mason, the great lawyer from the 30s, 40s. It's a television show about a lawyer. It's pretty good when he does his investigations and bam!
Hey, Lou, let's put him up to an age where he understands. Madoc.
Oh, how about Madoc? I bet you he doesn't know that either.
No, I'm afraid not. I think there are a couple of references to it in The Simpsons and stuff that I think you can kind of get the gist, but I don't know the original source.
Okay. Here, if you got time, go to that link, Doc. But in the meantime, Brian, it's understandable because what's over here is not necessarily over there. Do you know who what Mrs. Brown's boys are, Brian?
Not really.
I love it. I love it. Nobody in this country really knows anything about it. It is based in Ireland, isn't it? Because he's Irish, right?
Oh, I'm not entirely sure. I don't know.
Okay. Well, basically, it doesn't sound as bad as I'm about to. It's not as bad as I'm going to make it sound like. But a guy plays the matriarch of a family. He plays a woman and called Mrs. Brown, and it's hilarious. But nobody in the UK seems to like it for some reason. They say, I haven't found anybody. I've not talked to anybody on this show that likes Mrs. Brown's boys. But I'll put that in the notes as the chat log as well. She's funny. So anyway, okay.
If you say so, I'll take your word for it.
Oh no, I could show you. I could let you watch a skit that will make you piss your pants. When Mrs. Brown has diarrhea, and it's very hysterical. But anyway, that must be easy to amuse.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking kind of like relatively lowbrow comedy here, rather than
definitely.
Rather than anything else.
Right, and that's what it is. You're right. There's no sophistication. They acknowledge that the camera's there. They make mistakes, and they go on, and they acknowledge the mistakes, and they look right at the camera. They even show picture, like, when a camera actually busted through the window. They're like, that wasn't scripted. But anyway, it is pretty funny. But let's go on. Kalar begins looking at files on the Kittimer Massacre, and she hits a few brick walls, but obviously she's able to piece it together until Duras's henchmen find out and causes Duras to pay her a little visit.
Yeah, that's the beginning of the end of House Duras right there.
Yeah.
Somebody just can't keep his anger in check.
Right. There you go. But like I said, I don't really care for the killing of Kalar. But what are you going to do?
Move on, baby. Deal with it.
Right. There you go.
That's the Klingon way.
Yes, it is. But Dr. Crusher discovers that the bomb, oh, back to the bomb thing, was implanted in one of the arms of the Klingons. Oh, well, let's back up a little bit. I think I forgot to mention something. Because I think Gowron, see, you were talking earlier about misdirection and who actually is the bad guy here. Because it was actually Gowron who tries to bribe Kalar to speed things along. And he even offers her a seat on the council, which I always thought women couldn't serve on the council.
Very rarely do they ever sit on the council. And they'll never again sit on the Chancellor of the High Council. Only one woman's ever done that, and that's the last woman that'll ever do it. But yeah, women can't sit on the High Council.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, so Duras kills Kalar. Obviously, we now know who the bad guy is, and we also find out that the bomb was implanted in one of the arms of one of the Klingons, and whose man was it? Dun, dun, dun. That would be Duras again.
I do have a question. I'm going to bring this up. Okay. You got Gowron bribing the ambassador to the Klingon Empire. I mean, to the Federation. But look at his reaction when he found out about the bomb. Okay. Duras kind of took it. That's interesting. Gowron took it like total surprise, but then he turns around and tries to bribe Kalar.
Right.
This is why the whole discussion is brought up, that everyone thinks Gowron actually planted the bomb. He basically did what Duras did later on and probably knocked out that guy and then implanted the bomb in him because he didn't know he had it. Because to assassinate, the guy would have had no honor left to actually go through and be a human bomb for a situation. That's where you have to understand the mentality of the Klingon to understand why the bomb situation came up, and then turn around and watch Gowron act the way he's acting after the fact, then to say it was actually Duras that did it. Okay, I think Gowron was the one that actually planted the bomb, to be honest. My opinion on it. But there's no evidence, true evidence to prove he was, but there's no evidence saying that Duras just didn't say, you bring honor to my house by sacrificing yourself with a Romulan bomb.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where all the argument about the bomb situation and why everyone thinks Gowron may have actually planted the bomb.
Right. It's all misdirection. It's careful misdirection because we know Duras is the bad guy here, but yet Gowron is acting very strange. So maybe they're both bad. Oh, nope. Maybe it is Duras. Okay.
I mean, I think the reason why we don't like Duras here is not because of anything he does per se or it's proven that he does in this episode. Because I think you're right. I mean, the bomb happened to belong to a guy that was working for Duras, but you don't know whether or not Duras was involved in that.
Right.
The only thing that we see is that we know that he has dishonor from the previous episode, and we know that he goes out of his way to kill Kadar when it appears that that is being uncovered. But away from that, we don't know for certain that he's the guy poisoning Kempek, and we don't know that he put the bomb there explicitly. So it's really, it really is kind of very much, there are lots of loose threads here.
Right. But you can very much imply it, though.
And the threads will never be totally unraveled and find out what the picture was, because unfortunately, somebody had to not keep their anger in check and had to go do something about it.
Right. But first, before anybody did that, Worf and Alexander walk in to find Kalar near death and asks if it was Gowron. She says no, so he concludes, Duras. But actually, she mumbles, Alexander. So I was confused. Yeah, maybe Duras did it, or maybe Alexander did it. I'm not sure.
No, she said Alexander and then put his hand on Worf's hand.
Of course, I'm just kidding.
Right.
I got to have my just kidding sign on. Of course.
When?
I don't know. Sometimes I do. But, I mean, yeah, because I was thinking Worf should have said, maybe even in an outtake, but she said, Alexander. He should have said, you little jerk. You can't go killing your mother like that. But no, I guess not.
Or Kayla.
Yeah.
Alexander, this is your father.
Oh, yeah. Boom, ba-doom, boom. He finds out later, though.
Yeah.
But just as Dr. Crusher comes along, and of course, you know, as usual, she's unable to save Kalar. I don't think she's able to save anybody. Worf leaves and decides to get revenge, or is it... It wasn't revenge.
Rite of vengeance.
Vengeance, there you go. The rite of vengeance. And, of course, he tosses his comm badge on the floor.
He takes everything off on this baby.
Yes.
He took his sash off. He took his comm badge off. He grabbed his batleth and he walked right over to Duras' ship in front of all of his troops and says, I'm going to kill you.
Right. So how did he get out? How did he beam to the other ship? I mean, somebody should have been able to stop him.
He went into the transporter room, beamed over to the ship. Who's going to argue with the chief of security?
Okay. I always thought, you know, it had to be approved for people to move back and forth from between ships.
Nope.
Oh, come on, Lou. You don't even need to be approved to take the shuttlecraft.
Of course not.
I mean, I think there's lap security here. Certainly, Worf can get off the Enterprise, well, I would imagine.
Well, Worf is lap security.
Indeed.
So, yes. All the things he's learned by other people, you know, getting one over on him, he's picked up a thing or two on how to get away with something. But like you said, Worf gets on Duras' ship and claims right of vengeance. So he and Duras fight to the death.
And it's funny because Duras, like the sneaky, underhanded, conniving, lonely scumbag Klingon he is, says, if you kill me, you'll never clear your name.
Right. Yes. All right. Yeah. And he doesn't.
No, he don't care. Right? Does it look like he cares, dear Ross?
Now, I like it better later on when Worf takes out another person with his batleth, and you can actually see the batleth just kind of wiggling back and forth as it's in the guy's neck. I don't remember who that. I don't think that's Gowron later, is it? No, he gets Gowron in like the kidneys with the two
shards of his broken batleth.
Yes, but there was one person he actually takes out, and that thing is wiggling in the guy's neck. But this one got Duras in the chest. So
he made sure both hearts went out in one shot.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They do have two hearts.
So a quick question. Did people actually think that the Worf was going to kill him? I mean, did people? I thought it was kind of wide open for the Worf's about to kill him, but he obviously gets stopped by Riker at the end. And you know, this episode, and then following on from things like the enemy when Worf refused to give the blood transfusion, it really shows Worf as pretty much being, you know, he's willing to go right to the edge, right to the point where any of the human characters would wrestle with their conscience and then think, oh, okay, I should probably not do this. But Worf just goes ahead and says, sod it. Chang.
No.
I'm surprised that they allowed the main character to murder someone on TV.
No.
I'll give you a hint. Okay. Speaking as a Klingon, Lou knows I'm a very strict follower of the ways of the Klingon warrior. Okay. Someone kills Clara. Bet your bottom dollar won't be too far behind. I won't be too far behind them with something to kill them with, and I will get it done. okay? You kill my mate, you're dead. There ain't going to be no jury. There ain't going to be no trial. There ain't going to be no discussion. You're dead.
Yeah.
Gone. History. Don't even worry about trying to worry about the cops. You better worry about me. Okay. And with Worf, yes, that was probably the one time that he went over the edge. And he did it legally by the Klingon, the way of the Klingons. But the Federation looks at it as murder. Okay, and Picard right there and then, when he had Worf in the office talking with him about it, should have court-martialed him right there on the spot. But because he knows the Klingon, the ways of the Klingon Empire, all Worf got was a written reprimand in his record.
See, I took an analogy. My daughter likes when she pulls on the dog's tail and the dog turns around and bites her. She thinks, well, I'm just playing. Yeah, of course you're just playing, but she is an animal, and that's the way animals are. They're gonna bite you, whether you're playing or not. If she doesn't know, she doesn't think you're playing, she's gonna bite you. Well, deep down inside, he's a Klingon, and this is what Klingons do. But I think you're right. I mean, I don't necessarily think of it as murder in the Federation's eyes, because they do respect other cultures' beliefs, and therefore, you know.
No, I mean, no. It has to. I mean, baseline, it has to be murder. And I think that Picard kind of mentions it at the end, where there are, you know, X number of different cultures on board the Enterprise, and everyone, although they respect other cultures, they have to adhere to a certain set of values. And if you're not able to do so, then you should resign. And then he asks, well, you know, should you resign? I was just a little bit surprised that I'm not quite comfortable that Worf is, you know, he's happy to go back to work in security and everything is fine. I can understand where that's coming from. I think it's a very fine line there that they have to balance, because it's only 6 months away or 9 months away in the Trek world where Worf kind of resigns to go off and fight in a civil war as part of his home world. You know, he's a Federation citizen, and I don't think there are that many people that in the British military that can resign and go and fight in a civil war in another country and then come back 2 weeks later with no consequence. So I think that the way they play Worf is a little, that they give him a lot of rope. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that completely, Doc.
Is it murder if two combatants choose to fight each other and only one comes out of it alive?
It's second degree manslaughter.
Right, and yes. So, I mean, you know, Duras chose to take on Worf. He just happened to lose. So if that's the case, then not only does Worf murder once, he does it again to Gowron later, right?
Okay, that's a great, that's one of them gray areas where with Duras, that was a ritual. Okay, yeah. That's established Klingon law. Anyone has the right of vengeance, whether they're discommodated or not. You kill someone in your family, you have the right of vengeance. Mm-hmm. That is a given, okay? No matter what, okay? Now, with what Worf did with Gowron on DS9, that was kind of Sisko kind of backhandedly behind Federation law saying, Worf, I don't care how you do it, if you got to murder Gowron to get this situation taken. there's the gray line.
Well, see,
what Worf did on DS9, yes, was intentional murder, but it's legit the Klingon Empire.
But here's the thing I was thinking of. Let's say I go over to England and I take out the doctor, you know, because he disagreed with me on one of our shows, so I hunt him down and I take him out. I haven't violated an American law, so, you know, I'm in England. I violated their law. Once I come back, they'll extradite me back to England. But the point is he's on a Klingon ship. He's now under Klingon laws, and Klingon law says this is perfectly right.
But he's still a Federation officer. he's still a Federation officer, and that's why Picard gave him, told him what he told him. If he would have been a Klingon warrior, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now, Lou, but because he's a Federation officer, that's why we're having this discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, I was about to agree, and I say that, you know, the analogy of you coming over to England would be correct, but if you were to be a member of the military and do that, then you would have at least violated some internal military codes.
Yeah.
So you would have been, you know, you brought the service into disrepute, or you would have been under a different kind of, you know, rule of conduct. So had he just been a citizen, then they would either extradite or not, and if the Klingons think there's nothing to answer for, then there's no jurisdiction here.
Are you British military?
No, no, not at all, no.
Okay, since I'm the only one here that's been in the military, and work for the federal government as well. There is in place, and I'm going to use this as the U.S. military as a federation as an example. Okay, think of the U.S. military as a federation. Okay, because they're both kind of similar in their in some of their aspects.
Yeah.
If I went over to the Klingon ship, I violated the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Okay, no matter whether I was on another, whether I was in England killing Doc or I was on a Klingon ship killing Duras, okay? In the rules of the military that I belong to, okay, that's considered either manslaughter or murder or I think there's one other one. I have to look for it, look into it. But those rules apply when you walk, while you're – on when you took the oath to take the job, that count, that follows you 24/7. Okay, whether or not the civilian government, like the Klingon Empire, says that, okay, we consider this matter no problem, okay, but when you come back to the ship, the military doesn't, and that's why Worf got what he got. Does that make sense now?
Yeah, but he got off easy then.
Yeah, he got off real easy because, like I said, Warp, he should have been court-martialed. If Picard had done what he would have done for any other normal member of his ship, he should have put him up on general court-martial
Okay.
for what he did. But, again, this is where a captain – that's why captains are chosen among Federation officers – it's not because they've been around. It's because of their wisdom in their position as a commanding officer. And in this case, he looked at the situation and said, I'm going to give Worf a very big sterning talking to, but because of the situation of his culture, I'm not going to throw the book at him, per se.
Right, right.
Okay, but by all rights, Picard could have charged him with whatever the equivalency would have been for murder or manslaughter, and by all rights, he would have won. The case would have been won because Worf did go over there, intentionally start a fight with the man and kill him. Okay, I think that's either first or second degree manslaughter in our terms. Okay, that's what's going on with that. But like I said, the Federation has a set of rules, and no matter what takes his comm badge off, he's still an active member of that military. And those rules apply to him everywhere he goes, from when he's on the ground to where he goes to another ship and kills somebody. Those rules and those regulations follow with him.
Okay. All right. Well, then I guess the last thing we have to talk about is why Worf sends Alexander to his parents. I mean, does he not think he could be a good daddy? The ship is not a good place for him. He just doesn't have time for children, doesn't like children. What's the point?
I don't think he's ready to be a father. Yeah, I mean, come on. I'll speak from experience on this. When Heidi was brought to my attention, it was a month after she was born. I didn't even know she was born, be precise. And here's this little bundle of joy dropped in my lap with a heart monitor and a breathing monitor on her. And I'm like, oh my God, it hit me. I'm a father and I have no clue what in the world I'm doing. Okay. And with Worf, I think that's what the situation was. I've got this little, big bundle of joy in this case. It's on my lap, and I have no clue what in the world I'm doing. So what does he do? He sends him off to the only people who knows how to raise a Klingon kid.
Yeah.
His grandparents.
That makes sense.
Okay. I mean, it's not that Worf didn't love Alexander or anything like that. It's just that he just didn't know how to handle the situation. And his mother was smart. Down the line, he made him deal with the situation because that is who he should be living with, is his father.
Yeah, right.
Not with his grandparents.
Right. Okay, well then, I guess that is Reunion.
Kapla.
Sounds good to me. Does anyone have anything to add or something I overlooked?
Yeah, when you tell my fans they can contact me at my email.
Absolutely. What is that?
You ready?
I am.
I don't want
I saw that. It took me a couple seconds to figure that out. I'm like, let me see. I don't want a MS account, ACCT. Okay, I'll put that in link in there.
Okay. It's at Outlook.com, by the way.
Yeah, that is funny.
Well, you know why, how that came about, Lou? I got a Toshiba computer, and it's got, obviously, it's got Microsoft on it. Well, in order to make, like, Skype work and everything, I had to have an MSN account.
So really?
So I said, okay, I'm pissed. Fuck this shit. I'm just going to type. I don't want an MS account because I never want an MS account. I don't like Outlook.
Oh, we were doing so good, Brian.
Sorry.
At Outlook.com.
I put frag it.
Yeah, right.
And then put that in there. But I didn't want an MS account, and it just pissed me off. So I said, okay, this is the way you guys want it. This is the way I'm going to do it. So I typed in, I don't want an MS account. At Outlook.com. And guess what? Nobody, after all this time Outlook's been out there, nobody had that name for the email account. So I'm the only one in the universe that has that.
That is funny. Okay. I'll put a link in there. Everybody send something to Brian. Okay, then I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5.
4.5, definitely.
Hold on. But I was just thinking, you know, let's back up. You know, you're talking about how Worf wasn't ready to be a father. But, I mean, next week, Will, you know, Riker all of a sudden finds a kid that he knows nothing about who's actually much older than Alexander. And I think he was ready to take him on with no problem. So,
Well, that's Riker.
Yeah, that's Riker. Riker's the best. So, oh, about that rating on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And so, Brian, why don't you go ahead and end your final thoughts? And I think you said 4.5, so I could go ahead and toss that in.
I said 4.5. I think they could have done more with the storyline with Worf and Alexander and Kalis, but overall, it gave us a good idea of how Klingons are. I hated to see the end of Kempak, but it happens. You can't live forever. You can't rule forever.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it was a good overall balanced show. So my best rating, 4 out of 5. 4.5 out of 5.
4.5.
4.5. Go for it.
You got it. Okay, well, I didn't really like having Kalar killed off, as we said. I think we all agree on that. It could have been interesting to see, you know, Worf and Kalar married and perhaps, you know, see what Worf is like as a family man. But I don't. Okay. So I'm not sure why the writers killed her off. It makes no sense to me, but I'm not really looking forward to future Alexander stories, you know, especially the DS9 one where he comes on as a ship's fool. But Kalar makes it a very good episode as well. And I'm with Brian. I thought 4.5 as well.
What do you think, Doc?
And my dog loves this episode. She's just, okay, she said, I think the episode is 4 paws out of 5, I thought she said. So she doesn't have 5 paws, but she's given it a 4. Now, Doc, what about you?
I think I am going to generally agree with the sentiment so far. I think at the top of the show I mentioned that, you know, I don't like Alexandra. I don't like where we go from here. But frankly, this episode isn't that Alexandra-centric or heavy, despite him being introduced. I can certainly look past some of the kind of the minor flaws and minor problems I have with that character in particular, and I think he becomes more of a pain down the line than he is in this show. This show is very, you know, has a lot of focus on the Klingon politics and a good, you know, keeps the Klingon arc moving in a good way. It introduces a lot of good stuff as well in terms of the battleships. The battleship, Gowron comes along, he's going to be around for the next 10 years or so, something like that, and he's great. I think the Batleth is also first time shown in this episode. So overall, I think it's very, very positive. And yeah, it's unfortunate that it casts a long shadow in terms of Alexander, but that doesn't knock it down to anything under a 4 out of 5. So 4 out of 5 from me.
Mm. And see, Doc doesn't do half points, or I think he would have done a 4.5.
That's subjective. I don't know how anyone can make that assertion.
Mm. Well, obviously, Alexander gives it a 0.5 reduction.
We don't care about Alexander's opinion.
Yeah. We don't need no Alexander.
I don't know who gets more dish, Wesley Crusher or Alexander.
Well, Wesley's on more times than Alexander, so Wesley gets it now.
Yes. Barely.
Yes. How many different ways did we think of to kill Wesley Crusher?
Oh, I could think of more ways of killing Alexander.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to figure, you just rip Alexander apart and there'd be very little blood loss because he's so small. You could pretty much eat him and get it done. You know, fit him in a little suitcase and send him out the airlock. Yeah, we could go on forever.
That's an hour show by itself.
Yes, maybe we ought to do that. Reprise that 50, episode.
50 ways to kill Alexander.
Oh, you know, we were cheated on that song, by the way. Do you know that song by Paul Simon, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover?
Doc? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So let's
don't go. Don't tell me it was yours before he nabbed it.
Oh, no. But I'm saying we were cheated because you slip out the back, Jack. You make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just kind of listen to him. What was it? Something, Gus? Don't make a fuss, Gus, or something. Just anyway, he only goes out to about 6 of them. He only gives you 6 of the 50 ways. So really, it's pretty cheated. So out the back, Jack.
Like 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. But that's only 5 or 6 ways. So where's the other 44? Anyway.
That'll have to be another discussion.
Yes. Yes. So, Brian, maybe we should reprise How to Kill Wesley Crusher and this time How to Take Out Alexander Rozhenko. And why
waste the time? Let's get rid of Keiko, too.
Ah, yes. That's true. That's coming up soon. That is going to be coming up soon.
that'll be an interesting discussion. Right. I bet you get a lot of sushi recipes for that one.
Yeah. Hey, let's ask something that we should have asked in the show, so it's kind of like late. Alexander Rozhenko. Klingons don't give last names. He's Alexander, son of Worf. So where did the Alexander Rozhenko come in? Do you think it's after he went to live with the parents?
Alexander Rozhenko is his Federation name. But because when he signed up into the Klingon military, he actually used his Terran name and not his Klingon name. He's actually son of Worf in the House of Mortar. Okay, is actually what his Klingon name is.
Okay.
Just to answer your question on that, because Worf now belongs to the House of Mortar. So Alexander's Klingon name would be Alexander, son of Worf, in the House of Mortar.
Okay. Cool enough. All right, guys. Well, Brian, hey, thanks for coming on. Now, I have you, and I don't know if I just did this automatically, because when we started the show, I went through all the episodes I thought were Klingon, and I just put you in.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yes, because without you...
If you need me, and if you need me to fill in another spot, you know where to find me.
Okay, cool. Because without you, you know, the Lutrek show would have died off in episode 3.
I'm surprised it didn't die off at 10.
I know. Yeah, the Klingon diatribe. You got it. Well, okay, because I have you on for the drumhead, and I don't know if it's because of the Klingon exchange officer or if you actually asked for that.
I actually asked for that, actually.
Oh, good, then. I'll keep it as it is. Then we will see.
I actually asked for that because I thought it was a good episode, and it's a military episode, too, if you look at the situation and what was going on. I actually asked for that just because of the military aspect.
Okay. All right. Remind everybody what branch of service?
In the Navy.
Yes, you can sail the seven seas.
In the Navy.
Yes, you can put your mind at ease.
In the Navy.
Come on, people, and make a stand.
In the Navy.
Can't you see we get ahead?
In the Navy.
Come on, protect the motherland.
In the Navy.
Come on, and join your fellow men.
In the Navy.
Come on, people, and make a stand.
In the Navy. In the Navy.
Thanks again, Brian.
On the next exciting episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, imagine waking up in a mysterious future.
Data, I haven't remembered a day for the last 16 years.
Where time has altered the crew's destiny.
Perhaps it would be best if we discuss this.
Shut up!
Is it a Romulan trap to sabotage the Enterprise?
Shall we end this charade?
Or an endless nightmare with no escape? Find out on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So everyone, join us next week as we review episode 8 of season 4, and that will be Future Imperfect. I'm just not sure how to rate that one just yet. What about you, Doc?
No, I'm pretty clear. I think I know where I'm landing.
Okay, we'll see.
Who cares about the Klingon's opinion?
Yeah, well...
Now we're getting towards the end. I'm going to put a little note in here. Okay, because this is going to shock all my fans and shock even Lou.
Uh-oh.
I have given up my Imperial uniform.
I think I just hit my head.
Yes, I have sold... I spent $400 to get a movie, Star Trek 3 movie quality Imperial Klingon uniform. Have it all done up, got all my weapons and everything, and sold it to my best friend because I'm slowly weaning myself out of the Klingon Empire.
Oh, no.
And it's health reasons, Lou, and age. I mean, no offense, spring chicken over there. I'm freaking 52 years old. I'm halfway to 53, actually. Wow. And wear that heavy headpiece, wear that heavy costume for events is... too much for me anymore.
Well, I told you I did like your Bajoran one.
I haven't got a Bajoran one yet.
I thought you dressed up as... What no, did you I've dress up as besides Klingon?
Just Klingon and Federation. That's the only two I've ever dressed up as. Or classy Klingon.
Fascinating. I thought I
now. Now, what I have done is, as soon as I get my old headpiece put back together again, I've got a civilian Klingon costume. It's a lot cooler.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm going to wear that on occasion. But most of the time, if I go back Klingon, I'll be going back classic Klingon. Because there's no headpiece. There's no anything to mess with, you know. Just basically go in and do it.
Got it. All right,
but
guys.
I'm myself out of the Klingon Empire almost altogether because I know that even in CAG, even though I'm very respected in it, I'm never going to get any higher than maybe a commander. I'm a year and a half. I'm about 2 years away becoming a general in Starfleet Marine Corps. So it's, for me, it's staying with the Federation and finishing out my time, because in about 6 years, I'm not going to be doing this on a full-time basis anymore. Being in Star Trek fandom like I am now. So I'm weaning myself out of the stuff, selling the stuff I don't need, the excess stuff I don't need anymore, and just having it when I do want to get into Klingon or Federation, I just have it there and do it.
Okay. All right, then. All right, everyone. Take care. Thanks again, Brian, and good night.
Kapla!
Say good night, Doc.
Good night.
Yeah.